It is a simple and sad fact of life that people die in car crashes every day in this country. And considering how many miles we as a population travel on rubber tires on any given day, that's not too surprising. But there are some surprises in the fatal accident figures for Oregon for the last year. 2013 showed a very low number of fatal crashes, low as in you'd have to go back several decades to make comparisons. Let's get the numbers and the possible reasons for them getting so low. Troy Costales is the ODOT, Oregon Department of Transportation Safety Division Administrator, and our guest on the exchange. Troy, thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Jeffrey. How are you?
Good. What are the raw numbers on traffic deaths from last year?
Well, right at this point in time, we are posting the final total for 2013 at 316 fatalities. On one side, it's rather bittersweet to say that there's 316 people that lost their lives simply because we have a transportation system in the state of Oregon. But at the same time, not only is it 6% down from 2012, as you mentioned, this is the lowest number that Oregon's experienced since 1944, which is quite a long time ago.
All right, and the number actually is even smaller than I was looking at last week, because it was 317 for last week. What kind of refining goes on between the initial figure and then coming up with the final one?
Well, one of the definitions of when we count a crash, injury, or death related to the transportation system is there's about a 30-day window. And so until the end of this month, actually, the numbers may fluctuate a little bit, because if somebody unfortunately succumbs to an injury they experienced, let's say New Year's Eve, 30 days later it would still count. Pretty rare, but that does occur. But then also medical examiner, and it looks at the situation, and sometimes we see changes because somebody may have had a medical condition that actually precipitated the crash, started it, and in a rare case, somebody may actually have passed away before the crash even finished, heart attack or something along those lines. And so those will drop off, or if a crash is on private property, it ends up not counting, because we're looking at the public road system in this case.
Oh, so if they crash in a driveway, for example, it doesn't count?
Correct. And on the driveway issue, over time, not just in Oregon but nationwide, there have been concerns, unfortunately, because of kids being backed over, where vehicles backing out of their driveway, and that becomes a difficult conversation, because if they are in the driveway, then that's considered private property, or in some cases, some business parking lots. Or off-road. If they're off in the Forest Service land and they're not on the actual road itself, those don't end up counting. Unfortunately, it is still a fatality, and it will show in Oregon's medical records, but it won't show up in the transportation system.
Okay. So that you mentioned that the number for 2013 at 316 is down 6% from 2012. Has there been a fairly steady decline in recent years, or is it kind of a fits and starts sort of thing?
Up until 1999... Oregon being a very rural state, up until that year, for 50 consecutive years, Oregon was at or worse than the overall national average through 1999. Starting in 1999 until now, we have been better than the national average, sometimes by as much as 35-40% better than the national average. And that's a very positive conversation to have because of Oregon's rural nature. We do have the few population centers, but we have tens of thousands of miles of road that are, you know, out in the hinterlands, and medical attention and law enforcement and public safety officials are quite a ways away. So for us to show that type of a decline and been doing that now for that many years in a row is quite significant.
So is that the general issue, though, with having a lot of rural areas, though, is the distance from services, not just the distance traveled, or is it a function of both, really?
It's a function of those, the items that you mentioned. The rural roads tend to have higher speed. When you get off the state highway system, particularly the interstate, and you get off on the secondary highway system or county roads, the level of infrastructure that's there, the way the road is built, you have ditches, you have a lot of driveways, your blind corners, the speed is a little higher. Most of Oregon is covered by volunteer paramedics, volunteer emergency medical technicians. So you may be there getting your hair cut, and all of a sudden you look up and you're halfway done with your haircut, and your barber is no longer there because they heard the bell, they heard the whistle, they were taken off because they happened to be the local volunteer to go help somebody. And just recently, unfortunately, up on I-84 in northeast Oregon, when that bus crashed, mm-hmm. the scenes that were from the photos from people that were there, to see how many public safety officials all showed up there, and many, many of them that were there in that snow, in the ice, down the hill with the unfortunate victims of that bus crash, helping them out, were volunteers. They weren't paid to be there, but they've taken of their own time to be trained medically. And so that is part of the issue of the rural nature of the state, that it is a bit of an edge. It's great that we have the wide open spaces and can enjoy the outdoors. At the same time, when there is something that does occur, it becomes a little bit of an issue, because there's something called the golden hour. And that typically means that if there's an incident, really doesn't matter what it is, but if there's a traumatic incident, if medical service gets to you within that hour, you have a much higher likelihood of surviving or mitigating the injury, so it doesn't get any worse. And with a rural state, sometimes that becomes a bit difficult.
Absolutely. Big spaces and volunteers, as you pointed out. Troy Costales is the Safety Division Administrator at ODOT, the Oregon Department of Transportation. We're talking about the accident rate in the state of Oregon, the fatal accident rate, in fact, which is at a low since 1944, as of the 2013 numbers. We'll get into more about why in the minutes ahead. Join us here on the Exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. In what's been written thus far about the low set of numbers for 2013, Troy, I see that the comparison to the middle of World War II is apt, because that's a time when gas was rationed and people really didn't have much to travel on. And so the fact that we've gotten this low again with 312 fatalities confirmed, or 316 rather, for last year, what's the trend about? What are the reasons that we can figure out that lead to this?
A lot of things combine together in highway safety, and a phrase that is used is the four E's. And you look at things in those four E's, such as engineering improvements, you know, the roadway system itself being safer. This last couple of years, there's been a real big set of attention and money all over the state looking at where pedestrians need assistance, whether that is pushing the edge of the curb out a little bit, called bulb outs, so the pedestrian crossing on the actual road surface is a little bit smaller, or rapid flashing beacon setups where mid-block, where drivers may not be expecting pedestrians across because it's not a traffic signal, but mid-block, there's a pedestrian-activated yellow wigwag type of light that goes off, and there's a painted crosswalk with an island for the pedestrian to stop partway across the road. Helps the pedestrian, helps you and I when we're in our motor vehicles to be able to see them and know that they're there. There's also the vehicle engineering. Many, many cars today have not just one, but sometimes two, five, six airbags. Protecting you from severe injury, but also they put airbags now where your shins are, because it was noted that many times when there was a crash, people were hitting their knees and their shins. So there's an airbag there in order to try and lessen the severity of an injury. The medical side, as we said, even though it's volunteers, we are very fortunate in Oregon that those volunteers stay up on their skills. But also when they get to the hospital technology and what they're able to do is much, much different than it was in 1944. And then our public safety officials and law enforcement out there, you know, making sure that we're safe. Their job isn't out there for a quota, for a set of tickets. Their job's out there to watch for you and I. And when somebody isn't following the rules, hey, remind them of what the rules are. If that does end up in a ticket, that may be the case. But quite often at roadside, law enforcement is a frontline educator for you and I to know what we may have done wrong, but and how to correct it so we don't put ourselves and others at risk.
So of those four E's, I got engineering and emergency services. What are the other two?
Enforcement would be
enforcement,
the third.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then education, you and I, knowing what we're supposed to do, whether that comes through public service announcements. And today's day and age, you deal with a lot of information online, you know, getting information there and searching for that information, news stories, news coverage, as you're doing this morning, which we very much appreciate, getting the word out to everybody about how to behave. It's really up to each one of us for our personal responsibility in using that fourth E of education, things that we know that are right, things that we know we need to avoid so we don't put ourselves in a risky situation. Those four E's all combine together to put together a situation like we've experienced in 2013 But we also know that we need to push on all four of those E's even more, because 316 is still 316 too many, just because we have motorized transportation in the state.
Troy Costales again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He is with ODOT, the Oregon Department of Transportation. He's the Safety Division Administrator. We're talking about the 316 fatal traffic accidents on public highways in Oregon in 2013, which represents a number not seen that low since 1944. We'll get further into the numbers again, but here are the phone numbers for you to call if you'd like to take part in the conversation. 800-838-3760, anywhere you can hear us. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Our email, jx@jeffnet.org. I want to figure out what is included in this. You already mentioned that if it happens on private property, it doesn't count. So it's all the public transportation system. So does it includes anything involving a car hitting anything, another car, a pedestrian, a bicycle, all of those included?
Jeffrey, you're right on there. It involves any time that there's a motorized vehicle in the crash. So, you know, pedestrian, a bicyclist, scooter, skater, motorcyclist, passenger car, big rig, motor carrier. There has to be a motor vehicle involved in the crash, and then be in a public roadway that's opened by right or custom for us to be able to travel. If we go beyond a gate where it's private property, or maybe in some cases in some places where a public road may be blocked because of, you know, snow conditions or something like that, if we go beyond that, then that's not going to count.
So does one category account for far more of these than any other? Is it usually car versus car, or is it car versus fixed object? I mean, what's the usual highest subcategory within the fatal accidents?
We can look at it a couple different ways. The biggest individual category is the passenger car all by itself. The second highest is pedestrians. And unfortunately for Oregon, that is one of the sour spots for the past 3 or 4 years. As our numbers have been coming down, the pedestrian count hasn't necessarily followed in that same path. And so we've done some extra effort in the pedestrian area, as I mentioned, some of it engineering earlier about those beacons and the bulb out for some of the crosswalk areas. But at the same time, trying to do some education around pedestrians themselves and how they put themselves in harm's way and what they can do, and education towards drivers to be on the lookout for pedestrians. Within the passenger car area, there are two or three that I would highlight that are areas of concern that we're working on. One is what's called lane departure or road departure, where it is a crossover across the middle lane into opposing traffic or leaving the roadway altogether. And as you mentioned earlier about the big wide open spaces in Oregon, leaving the lane and leaving the road itself and going off to the side, it's not real forgiving in many areas of the state because they are county and rural roads where there are ditches and telephone poles and rocks and sides of hills or slopes. And when someone leaves the road, it's usually going to end up being the most dire of circumstances because of the type of geography that's there. The others are the human behavior. We still see roughly 30% of all fatal crashes that somebody behind the wheel has alcohol in their system or some other drug that is impairing their ability to control the vehicle. Speed is usually involved in about one-third, and speed is a compounding factor. When you leave the roadway and your car comes to rest, whether it's slowing down or hitting a fixed object, as you said, speed elevates the amount of energy in that particular situation. And so if you're going faster than what the speed limit is posted and you hit something, you're putting yourself at risk because of the higher speed.
When we talk about some of the circumstances here, though, is distracted driving showing up much in the causes here? People either talking on the phone or texting?
Yeah, that is a great question, and it is the, you know, whatever monetary sum you want to put on it, you know, the million-dollar question. The hard part about the distracted driving piece is that it is very rare that a law enforcement officer is actually going to see a crash occur. They're typically going to show up on the crash after the fact. And who is their best person to talk to about what happened? You and I. And with the penalty in Oregon of, you know, a ticket for texting and cell phone, and then as of January 1, that penalty has gone up, people are not saying to law enforcement that they were on the phone or texting or that they were distracted by something going on. So we know that distracted driving crashes in Oregon are higher than what we see in the data, but it's because people aren't admitting to it.
So I wonder if this also plays a factor in the you're talking about the resistance of the pedestrian accidents. They don't seem to be coming down that steeply either, and I wonder if that's a combination of either distracted driver or potentially distracted pedestrian.
Yeah, right on. There have been incidents of distracted pedestrians that are just so focused on their device. And we had a situation in the outskirts of Portland a couple years ago on Christmas Eve where a lady was driving herself, trying to get directions to a house that she was headed to. She did the absolute correct thing, pulled into a parking lot, got out of her car to talk on her phone to try and be able to get directions to where she was headed for this gathering. So focused on her phone, she didn't recognize that as she stepped away from her car, stepped up on the sidewalk, she stepped out into the travel lane. She was doing the right thing, but so focused on it that she was distracted from her environment. And unfortunately was struck and killed because it was a 35, 40-mile-an-hour road, and those are unfortunate situations for a pedestrian. We've also seen it on YouTube and news stories where people are just so focused on their device that they walk into weird situations.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I hope we'll talk to you again next year, and I hope we do, that the numbers will be further lower on all fatal accidents.
That would be wonderful.
Troy Costales is the Safety Division Administrator at ODOT, the Oregon Department of Transportation. Troy, thanks so much for joining us on The Exchange today.
I appreciate the invitation.
All right, take care. That will do it for this hour of the Jefferson Exchange. A reminder again, State of the Union coverage tonight at 6 here on the News and Information Service from BBC. If you'd like to hear NPR's coverage of the State of the Union address, that will be available on our Classics and News service, available in most of the places you can hear this station. Otherwise, you can find us online at ijpr.org. We'll take a short break and come back with hour two of the Exchange.